So now we are, so then we pointed out last week, because one day of the ruling can accomplish so much. The end of one's, even if a king is a lame duck, he can still accomplish a lot in one day. And certainly if it's the beginning of his reign as well. So now the Gemara tests this with one more situation. Now we are, let's say, Omar Mar, Meis Ba'Adar, Va'omad Acher Tachta Ba'Adar, Monin Shona Lezeh, Lezeh Pshita, Umauda Tema, this is Shosa Lebei Trele Medina, Kamashu, we would count 1 year. Count for both kings, the beginning of one and the end of the other. Then the Gemara says, "Meis ba'ador, meis ben Nisan, v'amarach betachtu ben Nisan." The old king dies in Nisan, and the new king takes over in Nisan. Bonin shana lazeh v'lazeh, ma'ud teima ki emirin yemechad b'shana choshev shana b'soif shana v'b'tchila shana emirin kamashmulan. As we just pointed out. And whether the one day is at the end of the year, the end of the reign, or the one day is the beginning of the reign, end of his life, but beginning of the year, it would still be count as a year. Meis ba'adar, Omad achar tachta bin Nisa. Now the Gemara says, David HaMelech dies in Adar, and Shlomo HaMelech starts in Nisan. Then, Moinin Rishon Rishon Ushniya Lisheni. Gemara says, let's say this is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 lines from the top. Mars says this should be simple, right? This should be the simplest case. This is the easiest case. The David HaMelech dies in Adar, Shlomo HaMelech begins in Nisan. So Adar completes is the last year of David HaMelech, and Nisan is the first year of Shlomo HaMelech. Gemara says, why do I need this as an entry into the Brisa? This is obvious. No, not, it, there could be a situation where it's not obvious. Tricha de imnu alei me adar umelech ben melechu. Maude tema nimnu lei tartin shnin kamashmala. The Gemara says this is addressing a situation where the king, let's say David HaMelech, was nifter in Adar. So Shlomo HaMelech is the shuin, right? For numerous reasons. Number one, when it comes to Malchus Beis David, then the monarchy goes from father to son, father to son. As long as the son is worthy of taking over the Malchus. So here we're in Adar. And this is an illustration. David HaMelech died Shmuel's time. But just to keep the examples easy, the David dies in Adar. Shlomo HaMelech, they get together. We'll be more clear in a moment. And they decide Shlomo HaMelech is going to be the next king. Good. However, they don't get around to organizing the coronation, making it official till Nisan, right? So now the Gemara says, since they don't get around to doing the coronation till Nisan, Nisan is counted as the first year of Shlomo HaMelech, even though there was absolutely no question in Adar that Shlomo HaMelech would be the king. We look at the Rashi.
Right.
I'm saying that it's similar to the sugya that's going to be coming up later on in the Masechta, and that is that if the Edom come late in the day, even though they tell us when the new moon was, but we have certain rules, and we would still. Here, Rashi says,
What type of coronation is there? Isn't it the Malchus goes from, as you said, from father to son? As soon as the father is Nifter, isn't the son automatically Melech?
That's the point that we're gonna dwell on now. Because as Nechemiah is pointing out, is when it comes to Malchus Beis David, when it comes to Malchus Yisrael, when it comes to the things that were not from the Shevet tribe of Yehuda, they weren't descendants of an Amalek, like Yerubim, all of the kings of the north during the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. So then they had to be, they were determined who the next king would be, and they had to be coronated. They had to have Mashiach with the oil and had a full coronation. When it comes to Malchus Beis David, when it comes to the Davidic dynasty, Rashi is going to point out there, it's as long as the son is worthy of taking over the father's spot, it happens the Yerusha. It's an heirloom. So there's nothing to be decided. There's no event to take place. So that's why this line has become a very important line, both in trying to explain it exactly, as well as in a truth of the Chasam Sofer about the passing of rabbinic positions from father to son. We'll see the Rashi. The Rashi says, "Umelech ben melechu." In other words, Gemara wants to, the Gemara is explaining to us that we're holding at the end of Adar, and it is absolutely clear that this king is going to be the next king. In fact, Rav Yoshev writes that if this king would declare war, it would be a valid declaration. He has the powers of kingship. He could begin a new tax. However, whatever reason, we don't get around to appointing him officially. Right? Now, Nehemiah is correct that if it's at, let's see, when Rechavam took over for Shlomo HaMelech, so there was no coronation. Because in the Davidic dynasty, it just passes, just like when Rachman al-Itzlan, a person dies, and the child takes over takes over the property of the parents. And again, in American law, it's probably different. There has to be the government has to get involved and collect taxes, and you have to have a probate, and you have to. But in halacha, it's an unremarkable situation. Father is nifter, the property automatically goes to the child without any a non-discussion. If you have several sons, then halacha gets divided up. If the father wrote a will and executed the will halachically correct, then there will be a process. But the passage of monarchy in the Davidic dynasty by David HaMelech, and that is as long as the son is worthy, is unremarkable. Why was there a coronation of Shlomo HaMelech? Because it was contested. Because there were others who were vying for the position. If there's a contest, if somebody is contesting the position, then it becomes important, then it becomes a process. So Shlomo HaMelech, in fact, was coronated. That's because there was one of the older sons of David HaMelech from a different wife, Adonai Yo, tried to make his way into the monarchy. So then he had to be put down. And then Shlomo required coronation. However, most of the time it wasn't contested. So then they wouldn't require any Mashiach. So Rashi says, so the Gemara is trying to, it wants to zero in a situation where it's an absolute shuin. There is no question. The only thing that remains is a formality. Nehemiah is correct. We don't even know what this formality is, but some formality is required. So even then, the formality becomes the date from which we begin the first year. That's the point of the Gemara. That's what the Gemara says. It's a melech ben melech. It's the slam dunk. It's the son is ready and ready to take over. And And Rashi adds in the imishum the imnu alei the loy itzrach lashminan shaminan lamireisha. If the Rashi says why are we designing this specific case where the king was already appointed, the king we know the king's going to be. And it's a son, Melech of Melech, because we already said that if the end of Adar, king is appointed, but not has, but not been formally established, we already said that in that case, we require the formal determination of the king in order to count the year as year one. We have to go a step further. It has been, it's been accepted, it's been determined. However, even more so, and it's not contested, and he's in a melech ben melech. The Rashi says, "Abul Hashani katarte." But now we have two indications that this person, our Shlomo Melech, is going to take over. Abul Hashani katarki ema nimnale mikamaisa kamash malon. So the Gemara tells me, even in that case, we will say Adar does not count as a year. The year begins with Nisan. The Tamishul Dover, and the reason Rashi says Lefisha Malchus Yerushahi, the monarchy with David and Melech is an heirloom. Is it the correct term? It's part of the inheritance. Okay, the Leman Yar, and how do we know that? The Torah says Leman Yarich Yomim Al Muchusay Mamlach Toyhu Ubono. That means that when we anoint David HaMelech, we have the coronation for David HaMelech, we are now coronating all of David's progeny. Ben Acher Ben, son, son, son. So he's already been coronated, already included the coronation of David HaMelech. And so the Gemara says that even in that case, we would wait till Nisan. Okay, now, that's the halacha. So we understand our halacha. But it still raises the question. Rashi says, the Gemara says, that Tricha de Imnu Alei. Imnu Alei, he means he's being appointed. And he's Melech ben Melech. The question that Nehemiah raised is, what do you mean he's being appointed? And Gemara says, yet it's only a Nisan, V'omad. V'omad ben Nisan. What's the Omad? There seems to be three steps. Imnu, right, determining who it is, Melech Melech, Imnu and Omad. So, Rashi says, we're referring to a divinic dynasty. There is one Mandomar who says it's referring to the non-divinic dynasty. But that becomes very hard to explain. Because even in the non-divinic dynasty, it's not a shuin that it goes to the son. So the whole point of the Gemara is to get a case where there is no question who the next king will be, and that's not so when it comes to the non-Davidic dynasties. It has to be the Davidic dynasty. Now the question is, so what are all these steps? So the Meir, so the Chasam Sofer says that there still has to be a determination that the king is, that the son is fit to take over. In other words, you don't always have a Shlomo Melech, the son of David Melech. Even then it was contested. But sometimes it has to be determined. It always has to be determined. Is the son worthy to take over? Is the son following the father's footsteps? Does he have what it takes? Is there another son that may be more appropriate to take over? So the Chasam Sefer says that there is a decision-making process. And that decision-making process is done by the Sanhedrin. So Imnu Alei means at the end of Adar, David HaMelech was Nifter, our illustration, David HaMelech. Now there is a son that's Roy, the Sanhedrin is supposed to sit and say, let's just determine together, Sometimes it won't shake out that way. Sometimes the Sanhedrin will say the son is not worthy to be a king. He doesn't have what it takes. So that's the imnuale. The Chasam Sofer says, but it's still difficult because once you have the determination of the Sanhedrin, then there's no coronation. So the Chasam Sofer says, nevertheless, the passageway of monarchy is not exactly the same thing as an inheritance. Inheritance slips. There is nothing that has to be done. I tell the story about Pearl's grandfather in Erev Sukkos. It's a great story. Rabbi Prail's grandfather, the person he's named after, Elazar was a Rav in Elizabeth, I think. And he was Nifter on Sukkos. Elazar. And he was Nifter on Sukkos. And he was ailing days before Sukkos. And he knew that he didn't look like that Alpi Derech HaTev he was going to live. So day before Erev Sukkos, he asks his Reverend to call the Rav of the nearby town. Prell knows the name. And he said that that time that they didn't do what we do, where they have hundreds of Esroigim and everybody gets thrown Luvim and Esroig. They had a group of Lulavim and Esroigim. And what they would do is they would leave it in the shul, and people would take turns. And every time in the first and second day when you pick the luminous, you were coined it, and then you put it down, having in mind that you're giving it to the next person, or you're giving it back to the shul, back to the rabbi, whatever it is. But you continuously coin it. And he didn't think he'd make it through Sukkos. He had bought the luminous ringim, and his daughters. And he had one son, yes, the Pearl's father, who was not yet bar mitzvah. That means that halachically, all the lulav and esroigim, if he's nifter on the sukkahs, it would become the property of his non bar mitzvah age son. Now, a non bar mitzvah age boy can be kona, he cannot be machne. Cannot sell it. He not give it to somebody else. So our love and estrogen would now belong to this underage minor. The community could not fulfill any of the mitzvahs. The remarkable thing is you have a Rav who's leaving this world, and he's 2 days before face, and what's he thinking about? Who's going to be thinking about that the community will not have love and estrogen? Because Yerusha doesn't require the son to make a kinyan. It simply slips into the next child's possession. It's different than some areas of American law. Halachically, that's why one of the thorny issues, if a person does not design will halachically, right? So let's say a person would write a will that he wants a third. This property to go to a daughter, and another to another daughter, and another third to the son. Or he does other stuff. He takes a certain property and gives it to a cousin, gives it to a good friend. So halachically, when this person dies, the son gets all the property. Because one isn't allowed, one can give away what everyone wants to give away before one dies. Once one dies, then the Ribbono Shel Olam said, this property goes to the son. So all of those people who are picking up from the will, it doesn't belong to them. It belongs to the son. Because the father did not give it away before he died. The father gave it away after he died. The father can't give it after he died. He doesn't own it anymore. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu already determined it goes to the son. So now there are Rav Moshe Feinstein say that there are grounds to respect the will. It's an outlier of a position. It takes the position that it's a big finish. Only Rav Moshe could have said it, and people would respect the position. He says that we know that the purpose of transferring property goes by intent. right? And the person, when I want to sell you something, it's my intent which sells. I have to do a formality. I have to write a, I have to write a document. I have to make sure it belongs to you, that you can prove it belongs to you. No, that won't be contested. I have to be able to, have to do kinyanim. I have to do acts of acquisition to make it formal. But they're all said and done. We know the person intends to do something. That is the power behind acquisitions. So Rav Moshe writes, we know that this person wants to give the property to his children in the following way. So whatever it takes to do that happened. So if it takes to do that happened, that it has to be sold before he dies, it happened because we know the intent. So that's a huge leniency. I don't think Rav Moshe says we should do that initially, but that what people do over the years, they've done different things. One is to write a will and say the will is chal a moment before the person dies. So that works for everything that a person owned when they wrote the will. But let's say they write the will when they were 60, and then from 60 to 120, it's yesterday, a few days ago, the oldest Jew in Israel was Nifter. He was 117. I was reading about this. 117-year-old Jew is a religious man. He was a farmer. And he was a, I'm not sure where he came. He came to Israel in the 40s. I'm not sure from Tayman or from Russia. I'm not sure. And he came to Netanya. He was a farmer. And he went to shul every single day. He said his mind was clear, mamash, to the end. And only 3 more years, 120. But 117. And his mind was clear at the end. He was asking him shilas and he was answering questions. And he went to shul. Told me he went to shul every day. He went, 116, he went to shul 3 times a day. So the children were saying they think that he died because of the quarantine. He didn't die because of COVID. And I think if not for the quarantine apparently he wasn't able to maintain his schedule. I think not for the quarantine, could have gone longer than 117. In any event, so this person, if he made his will when he was 60, right? So he says that everything that he that the entire will should be effective a moment before he dies, that would only work for all the things he bought before he was 60. But the things that he bought from 60 to 120, 117. They would follow the regular halachas of wills. That's why what the most effective way of taking care of this is what is in the time of the Ramah, when I don't know who developed it, but it's already recorded in the time of the Ramah, so it goes back to the 1400s, that the father writes the will. There's another document where they make a huge debt. One of the non-testators, a huge debt to his daughter, right? And but you when it creates a debt to a person that, right? When it makes a debt to the when owns, let's say, he figures out after when it's finished the life insurance policy and the house and all the property was going to be, I don't know, $1 million, he divides it all up. He makes a $3 million debt to his daughter. And he writes, if the children follow the instructions of what's in the will, then the debt is subsumed as part of the will. Then the debt is not as waived or not created. But if the children do not respect the will, so then the money goes to the entire estate to take care of the debt to the daughter. So that way the son cannot walk away with everything saying, it all comes to me because he's the heir. It's fine, it all goes to him. But now the daughter will come and say, no, it all comes to me because you owe me. You didn't follow the rules of the will. They had the entire estate, and the entire estate is mortgaged her property. That's what we do. It's fascinating that it's called the Chatzi Zohar. In other words, it was to give women equal rights. I find it fascinating that already in the 1400s, 1500s, the rabbis were concerned about giving women equal rights to the estate. I don't think it was an equal rights issue. I think it was that daughters felt enfranchised. So anyways, but that is how Yerusha works. So when it comes to the monarchy, the Chasam Sefer says, not exactly. Not exactly. It's not just that the monarchy slips in. It's that there has to be some, it's that the child has the full rights to the monarchy. Real Yerusha, nothing is an unremarkable event. The property just transfers over to the child. Malchus, the Chasam Sefer is based on this Gemara. Based on this one line of this Gemara, the monarchy doesn't just slip in to the next generation. The monarchy has to be transferred, but it's transferred the Yoresh, that he has the full rights to the monarchy. And in fact, based on this, the Chasam Sefer questions the Rambam. The Rambam says that what's true for monarchy is true for all positions of Soror, all positions of high profile, all high public positions. So the Rambam writes that all high public positions go with Yerusha. And therefore, the Ramah writes that rabbinic positions also. The rabbinic positions, the Sarara, based on this Rambam. And the Chasam services, based on this Gemara, questions whether the Rambam is the unanimous, is a consensus view. This Gemara says that even Malchus does not automatically go to the son. Even Malchus, there is the Imnu. There has to be an evaluation as whether it is appropriate or not appropriate. The Marshdam contested the Ramah based on another Gemara. The Marshdam based on Nagoda. The Ramah says that rabbinic positions go to Yerusha. This was a common and not uncommon issue that came up in different times in Europe. So the Chasam Sefer Paskin in his writings that it did not go to Yerusha. The Chasam Sefer's own positions did go. That was the Chasam Sefer was the Gadol HaDor also. But the Chasam Sefer is based in this Gemara. He says it doesn't necessarily go to Yerusha. And then the Marashdam said based on a different Gemara. The Gemara says that there are three items in the Beis HaMikdash that have crown. One is the Shulchan, it's a crown. It's where the beds go. One is that the Aron has a crown, and the golden Mizbeach has a crown. The Gemara in Yuma says that David HaMelech got the crown from the Shulchan. In other words, the Shulchan represents Benosim, the status. So David HaMelech got that crown. Aaron got the crown from the Mizbeach. And the crown of the Aaron, no one gets. It's there. Whoever is worthy gets it. The Marashdam said, Rabbonus is the crown of the Aaron. The Gemara says it didn't go to anybody. It's Munach. So the Marashdam said, based on Gemara, he was against this Ramah. What I found also very interesting in this parasha is that there was a machlokes later on whether Gabbos goes be Yerusha. Now, Gabbos is being referred to as a Gabbai Shamas. In other words, I don't think this happens nowadays, but even a generation ago, Shul had Shamasim. And the Shamasim were often the Gabbai, at least during the week, if not on Shabbos. And the Shamas was the person who, Rogers had a Shamas, right? Had a Shamas in Rochester, probably. So it was a person who took care of to make sure the shul was organized, right? We have Ed Abraham, which is a gabbai, and he's taking care of the organization of the shul. That's like the old days. There was a person who took care of all the different details of the shul, make sure that the home mushroom and the sidurim, and during the week was also the gabbai. So there's a machlokes amongst the achronim as to whether gabbos, this kind of gabbos, shamas goes be Yerusha. What's the machlokes? The machlokes is whether it's considered to be a position of sarora. Because in terms of the substance of the position, a lot of it is not significant work. A lot of it is cleaning up and putting the siddurim back and making the siddicha mashamar, but do get give kavod to people. You get to give aliyahs to people. You get to give hagman lila to people. So the fact that you get to give kavod, that certain achrayim, that makes it into a position of svara. So again, it comes back to this line. So this Gemara says that, this Gemara, in the questions, it's fantastic, Terence Merrill Yashav, we'll finish up. This Gemara wants to give an example of a position that's a shuin. There is no question. How do we do that? It's Adar, he's a son, he's Roy, he's Melech ben Melech. The Sanhedrin already said he's Roy. So he's the king. It's Malchus based David. It doesn't require a coronation. It's not being contested. But like Ahmad, it's exactly what that means. We're not sure, but the sense that I get is he just didn't go into the office. He didn't take over. He didn't move into the White House yet. Loi Omad, because I forget where I saw this. In one of the forums I saw that by Malchus Beis David, king becomes a king when he begins doing the work of a king. Malchus Yisrael when you're coronated. Malchus Beis David doesn't require coronation. If it's an heir, if it's the heirloom, if it's an inheritance, and if he's Roy. So when does he become the king? He does the first order of business. So it sounds like that's what the Gemara is saying. It's Adar. Sanhedrin vetted him. Sanhedrin said he's Roy. But he doesn't get to move the family into Yerushalayim, into the palace, till Nisan. He doesn't do the first order of business till Nisan. Nothing came up in the last few days of Adar. So then Nisan becomes the first day of Malchus. Well, Yoshev says he thinks all of these answers are very, very sketchy. I don't know how you say sketchy in Yiddish, but he says all of these answers that they don't really, the question is still such a powerful question. There's a Me'iri, a fascinating Me'iri. The Me'iri says that Imnu Lehmi is the people have, I don't understand the Me'iri, he uses the language that people have accepted him as being the next king. He has popular, he has a popular vote already at the end of Nisa, at the end of Adar. But he hasn't begun the work till Nisa. Just a fascinating lashon. Well, Yoshua says, Achrei kechloi sakol. The kash is a powerful kash. Why? Because at the end of Adar, this person says, it's time to go to war. Dana Mochama. He is the Melech. This person at the end of Adar says, we got to impose a tax. It is a tax, right? Right, exactly. He would be able to do it. So Yashua says the following. He says that he thinks that the person is a melech at the end of Adar if he chooses to do something as king, activate his malchus. He is the melech. Simply for the purpose of dating documents. That's what this Gemara is saying. It's the convention of when he becomes king. So that will depend if he doesn't move into the palace, to Lanisa, okay? But in terms of Lanisa's deity, without Rav Yoshev, I would have said that his monarchy is there. He decides to go to war, he became the king. And the Chav Zayin Adar, he goes to battle, he's the king. Chav Zayin imposes a tax, he's the king. Chav Zayin, he expropriates some property. He reads the Parshas of Melech and Shmuel. He's like, okay, I like this one. I'm going to take away this. So then Chav Zayin, he becomes the king. And well, Yoshev says no. He says, and the father died on Chav Adar. Sanhedrin met Chav Aleph Adar and said that this son is the son that's Roy. Well, Yashim says, as of Chav Aleph Adar, he is all the halachas of king. All the halachas giving covenant again. He has to get the Sefer Torah. He just can't take on a beard. He has 18 wives. He can't take a 19th. All the different halachas. But the convention of marking the calendar, so that will wait until he moves into the office. Love it. Okay. So that's the that's this Gemara. As I said, it's Sorry? Oh, no, so it happened. He ended up calling the rabbi. He made a kinyan. This other rabbi gave him Allah Misroiger. He became the owner of it. And Rabbi Frail's grandfather's Nifter and Sukkos. I don't know if he made it to the first day. Amazing, just amazing that the have a rove. That's what's on his mind. Okay, so now the Gemara is that's the Gemara. Was that? Here we have brought hundreds and hundreds of. Okay, so the school of Arichus Yamas. And Omer Yechanan. Yechanan says, now that we have a very technical passage over here. Omer Yechanan. Minayin la malachim shein moinin lehem ela minisan. In other words, what is the source of this? From the beginning of this Masechta until now, last week, we spoke about why we need to have the convention of dating documents. At the very end of last week, we spoke about that we use kings because of Shalom Malchus. We use non-Jewish kings. We'll discuss that. And the convention is Nisan. Nisan is when we mark the year. The king becomes a king in Shvat. But he will rack up year number one by Nisan. And the purpose of that is that we know that Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, we know the order of the months that later on, the person who has a star from Sivan of the third year of the king, we know that he is in fact before the person who has Tammuz of the third year of the king. Okay, I think most of it. Why did they choose Nisan? For us, we wouldn't ask the question. The Apostle in Chumash, we see that Nisan is the beginning of the year. But you see from the Mishnah that there are many beginnings of the year. We see that Rosh Chodesh Elul is the beginning for Ma'aser. We see that Rosh Chodesh Shvat. So how did they choose Nisan to be the Rosh Hashanah for this particular convention? The Gemara says, Rabbi Yechanan, Minayin la Melachim shein moinin lev elu mi Nisan shenemar. A pasuk in Melachim Aleph when it comes to when did Shlomo HaMelech become king? When was the Beis HaMikdash established? It was in the 480th year from the time he left Mitzrayim. 480 years from Yitzias Mitzrayim till Binyan Bayis really completed the first Beis HaMikdash. Bishona Harivius, however, it was the fourth year, the Chodesh Ziv Chodesheni, it was the second month of the fourth year, Lemelech Shlomo Al Yisrael. So it was 480 years since Tzias Mitzrayim, and 4 years since, and 2 months since Shlomo Melech became king. The Gemara says that if the same pasuk marks the years, then it makes sense that it would use the same marker. Makish Malchus Shloima liyitzias Mitzrayim, liyitzias Mitzrayim minisan av Malchus Shloima minisan. Mara says, therefore, it stands to reason that we would count the years of Shlomo Melech in the same way as we count the years of the Jews leaving Mitzrayim. And in fact, it says that the second month was Ziv. That means the original name for Iyar is Ziv. Ziv means to shine. The Gemara will explain later on why it's Ziv. One reason is because the Avos had all been born in Nisan. So that's so Iyar was an uplifted month, and all the Avos. It could be because it's already into the spring. The cloudiness of the winter has gone away. The Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points out that the month had Hebrew names, but we picked up Aramaic names. All our months are Aramaic names, right? Cheshvan is really Mar Cheshvan. Why is it Mar Cheshvan? Merachesh. It's really to Mar Cheshvan means it's Merachesh. It's bubbly. It's different interpretations, but it means activity, so, minimal activity. So why did we pick up the Aramaic when we had such beautiful names? Ziv is a beautiful name for a month. So why do we end up calling it Iyar? So the Ramban says is that because he wanted to always remember the redemption that brought us the second Beis HaMikdash. Brought us this right, the second Beis HaMikdash. So when we came back from Babel, we came back with Aramaic names. Just like month, the numbers of the month remind us of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the names of the month remind us of the redemption for the second Beis HaMikdash. Ramban has a principle that we learn from Achodesh Hazeh Lachem, the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam made Nisan, the beginning of the year, for the month, for the purpose of counting months, was because of an idea that the calendar should almost serve as a reminder of Gula of redemption. So we came back in the second Beis HaMikdash, we brought the reminder, the Gula of the. I think that when we leave this, what's going to be left when we leave this? Golos. I'm going to rename the months. We're going to do them on December, February. I think we're going to use the days of the week. That way we can hold on to Sunday. But if you go back to your mission, I'm sure you have to have a 6-day work week. If we hold on to Sunday, we got to find the work week. So the but the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a fascinating approach. He says that Klal Yisrael decided to hold on to the Aramaic names because we wanted to remind ourselves that this second Beis HaMikdash was not Geula, was not the enduring Beis HaMikdash. We knew already from the beginning that since it missed some of the Nisim of the first Beis HaMikdash, it didn't have the Shechina, so Chazal didn't want the Jews to think this is Geula. They wanted the Jews to realize second Beis HaMikdash is your preparation ground for a very, very long Golus. And Yaakov says that's why we maintain certain Aramaic names. Why do we pick Aramaic? Why names in Babel? Why do we pick Zera and Rabbah's? Roma probably is. So this shows us that we had the Hebrew names and it was a conscious effort to maintain the Aramaic names of Babel. So Gemara says, and that's how we know that already from the time of the Nevi'im, the Gemara is asking the question, why did we choose Nisan? So the way that we've been learning the sugya until now, it's a convention. That means that somebody chose it at some point. Now the Gemara is saying that it may have been a convention that was adopted, but it was already presented by the Nevi'im. In other words, it was already a position that was, it was a convention that was adopted already in the time of Malchus. They had to determine the time of David HaMelech or Shlomo ascending to the throne. They had to decide at some point when they decided to use a counting that was not the natural counting based on the date of becoming king. As the Gemara says, well, it sounds like that already in the time of the Nevi'im, when Shomach became king, they already said, we're going to count the Malchus from Nisan Mitzias Mitzrayim. The Gemara is a very great example of how rigorous rabbis are. The Gemara goes on to say, so how do we know Yetzias Mitzrayim Gufa Minolon de Minisan Mininon? How do we know that when we say from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim that we are counting from Nisan? Dilma Mitishrei Maninon. Maybe. And the years began with Tishrei. The world was created in Tishrei. And the first year from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim was a the first 6 months post Yetzias Mitzrayim. Maybe when we got the Luchos in Yom Kippur, that was already the second year from Yetzias Mitzrayim. In other words, how do we know that the Torah didn't have some built-in convention that counted the years from an artificial point in time? So the Gemara says, maybe this may be Mitzrayim Gufa Minola. The Minisim and Dilma Mitisha Minina. Loi Salka Daitach. That is not something that we can consider. Siv. How do we know that? Vayal Aaron Akoin Al Horahor Al Pi Hashem. Vayal Mashon Mishnasar Abom Lesis Bnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim. Chodesh Chashmish Vechod L'Chodesh. Siv. We know the Torah records the death of Aaron be in the month of Ob, the fifth month, from Yetzias Mitzrayim, right, the 40th year. Dibar bo mishana ba'ashte oser chodesh ve'echad lechodesh dibar Moshe, and we know that Moshe Rabbeinu begins the Sefer Dvarim by speaking to us on the 11th month. Mirekoy ba'om mekori lishnas arboim, mekoy b'shvat mekori lishnas arboim mechlal d'rosh hashana lav tishriyu. Gemara says we have the same year, and the 11th month is, and Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking in the 11th month after the Ptir of Aaron. Aaron died in the fifth month, and so therefore, if we are counting years by Tishrei, then Moshe Rabbeinu would have to be in the 41st year. So Heyach Meforesh. The Gemara says, so now that's true that the years that are in Chumash and Devarim are counted from Yetzias Mitzrayim. But how can we be sure that they weren't being counted from the time of the Hashkamas HaMishkan? The Omer of Papa, Shnas Esrim Ligzer Shava. So the Gemara says, we'll teach the Gemara base that all the years in Chumash are counted to the same source, and they counted to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay. So then we'll just pick up when the Gemara will then demand knowing that Aaron in fact died before the first speech of Moshe Benu in Devarim. So we'll pick up that next week in Yom Kippur.
Sheikh.
Thank you very much.
Night.
Good night.